DMT World presents The Rambling Rabbit, and I am its host, Happy KB. Welcome to The Rambling Rabbit. Today we have a guest with us all the way from Japan. We have Shawboy with us. Shawboy, how have you been?
Pretty good. Good. Just fresh back from the USA.
How long were you in the USA?
A whole month. Of course, not enough to see such an expansive country.
Right.
But I got a very, very delicious taste of it. Thanks to DMT World.
Thanks. That's awesome. You went from one part of the United States clear over to the other, didn't you, in this month?
Absolutely. The East Coast to West Coast.
Wow. That's...
I flew over all the flyover country.
That's awesome. Okay, so, wow, here we are. It took us a minute to get caught up with each other because it baffles me that you're actually, it's the ninth. Yeah, you're in the future and I'm in the past to you. And that always blows my mind how that works. But it does work, and we're meeting up in Discord. So whatever, this Discord is our place right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I always say, most of my online stuff with these huge time zone differences are with DMT World members. I'm always saying that, I'm baffled that we have no qualms about traveling to other dimensions, but time zones, simple addition and subtraction, seems to baffle everybody.
Yes, it does. It's just because we can't bend our brains around the time factor of I'm on this side of the earth and you're on that side of the earth, and just how long it actually takes for that, the traveling aspect of to get to it. So even when I go from one time zone, like 1 hour time zone to another hour time zone, throws me off. So it's just one of those things we used to, especially in DMT World, because that's what I think about. Like, I talked to several different people from, Hungary and Sweden and just that time difference. Like, they're up when I'm sleeping and vice versa. And so we do a lot of the communication through our messenger, and it just, like, you know, they're at night, I'm at day, we're answering the opposite, and just, it just works. It just kind of works. Sometimes we bleed over into each other's time, but very seldom, it seems. I think that's the really neat thing about everything. So how long have you been with us the whole 4 years?
Been there for the whole 4 years. I stumbled across it. And I had no idea about how long it had been going for. But I think I joined in like April or May.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking up to see if I can see it. Because it'll tell me on your profile. You just stumbled across it?
Yeah, I just started, was looking, DMT came into my world, into my consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I had not yet had it at that stage, and I'd been away from psychedelics for almost 3 decades.
Right.
And then the Renaissance happened, and it sparked my interest, and I saw that it was a legitimate spiritual path after I'd been on a more traditional spiritual path.
Right.
For that interim. It was psychedelics that threw me into that and kind of threw me out of it.
Right.
And then I realized, and I started listening to Terence McKenna, and that blew my mind, and that, okay, DMT, and it came up, DMT World, and okay, that sounds exactly what I'm looking for. And I was immediately just impressed by the incredible heartfelt sharing, openness, welcomeness, the wisdom, the generosity of the community. I was hooked. I spent way too much time on DMT World back in the
day. You actually, it looks like you started, you joined us on May 9th of 2019. So you came in a month after we actually launched the website, went live, because we did a beta test for a while from February, and then we launched it April, like the 1st of April. And so you came in a month after we had been there. So like you have been from like the growth, I think that you have actually gotten to witness is pretty comparable to what I've witnessed on the site and the different, there's this thing that happens that I notice on the site, and it's the constant turning wheel of people that come through. And there's those of us, those of us like you and some other people that have stayed, but like that wheel has just kept turning and turning and turning. And it's fascinating to see like the progression of growth, the closeness of that people have gotten. You know, you've built a lot of your friendships with a lot of these people in DMT World, and they're going to be lifelong friendships. And it's so crazy that you're clear over in Japan and we're clear over here, but like, I feel like I know you better than I probably know most people who are in my real life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. to be honest, when I started getting into it, I'd had no need for online friends. I'm blessed with a very, very tight group of male friends. Tight because we're all loose nuts living outside of our own culture. So there's no leaders. We're just a bunch of people doing what we want to do. There's 10 of us that we surf together, we camp together, we do drugs together, we party together. We come together we just come together because we enjoy doing the same thing.
And it's
tight. So I used to kind of used to mock the online friends. Get a life. Get a life. And then I just fell in love with this group of people from DMT World, and we started all these spin-offs. T-Rex kind of started all these spin-off Discord groups and this Marco Polo video chat thing, and we you know, it's a family, and such a family that they brought me across the Pacific Ocean. They flew me across the Pacific Ocean. And we met up and we shared some, you know, super intense, beautiful experiences together that, yeah, I haven't shared with my next door neighbors. Yeah, beautiful. Absolutely. I'm always filled with gratitude for what DMT World has brought into my life, the wisdom and the connections.
I think part of it is, all of us that come to DMT World, we're all in the same, where we just need to connect with people. You have the people that you are with, but like you are a person in our community that you have a lot of wisdom. You have a lot of, you just connect with a lot of people in what you're doing with your meditation, with your classes. You're very charismatic, but you're very authentic. Your pictures alone that you post on our site, that shows a lot of who you are. And that's appealing because we all feel it. And I think that's what the DMT World is we feel each other so well. We relate so well to each other because like I can sit in here and all these stories and these trips and the just whatever people going through, it's like, yeah, I get it. I'm there. I'm that person. I've been there. And I think that's what DMT World, you know, we don't come, the ego doesn't come into, well, not always. Sometimes the ego comes in, but the ego, it doesn't live in DMT World. The ego knows where its place is in DMT World. And go ahead.
Yeah, I think the simplicity of the DMT World, some might say the, the antiquated setup of DMT World kind of cultivates that community because it's very small. You post a picture, you make a comment, That's about it. It doesn't get much more complicated than that.
Right.
And like you said, there's no kind of algorithm trying to funnel you into particular groups, anything like that. That freedom aspect.
Right.
And it seems, I mean, I've been trying to, I'm just starting my journey with cultivating shrooms, and I get onto the shroomery or DMT Nexus, and those things, I look at them and my eyes start spinning because they're so complicated to follow.
Yes, yes.
And
it is not user-friendly.
And there's a lot of ego going on. It's like, yeah, I know. And you do. I've never had that on DMT World, or really. People are just genuinely want to share what they've learned.
Right.
And it seems to just keep going on. And I'm just grateful that I came in as a total noob, at least on extraction and, of course, mushrooms and all this stuff. And thanks to the other people, I quickly became an elder, I learned, and then I can suddenly give out information on how to do an extraction, for example.
Yeah.
Where, that just shows it's like a university.
Right.
University, right?
When it DMT World's very non-threatening. I see it all the time. You can see the people that post and they make the way they post. Like, I am knee deep into other social media platforms just because I want to represent DMT World out there as well. I run the DMT Facebook group, and it's so thick with so much other types of energy, but that energy does not reside in DMT World. People come on and they ask questions there because they feel comfortable that we're not going to ridicule them, that we're not going to make fun of them, that we're not going to say, we're not going to talk down to them, we're not going to, and that comfort is what I, in DMT World, if I have questions, I'm going to ask the people in DMT World, because they're not going to think different or down about me. And I think that's how other people see it as well. It's like one gentleman just posted, he's like, I've been here for a little bit, just kind of checking it out before I like start sharing myself. I just wanted to make sure like what this place was like. And it's like, I wonder how many people have sat in DMT World and just observed. And then finally was like, okay, I'm going to kind of interact here. I'm going to start doing some stuff, because you just, the people that just show up, like we've got a bunch of new people right now that are showing back up into the community. People who haven't been around for a while are starting to show back up. I don't know what the crazy phenomenon is, but I sure like it. It's great to see the place as active as it has been lately. I also think you have helped with that doing your little United States tour, which I want to talk to you about. Like, what did you do when you were here?
Yeah, okay. I definitely want to talk about that. It's still very much in the forefront of my mind, having just got back. My story is kind of often start off like the Big Bang.
Yeah.
Like, we give a big story. So there basically was a core group of DMT World members that we kind of splintered off, and they're less active, if at all, on DMT World now. But it's T-Rex, Sephora, IAF, Animal Energy, and Luke Skywalker, who's still there. And also there's X-Magic and a couple other people. But we started being friends. They started another podcast, and we had all these different groups and stuff together. I did some online courses with them. And IAF, who's the female partner of Animal Energy.
Right.
He started studying Reiki with me online. Obviously online, because he's living in Rhode Island and I'm living in southern Japan.
Right.
So it was online, which is something I'd like to kind of talk about. So Reiki, we can talk about that later, but anyway, it involves an energetic initiation.
Right.
Where a Reiki master, which I don't like that word master, it's a bit heavy, but a Reiki master has the ability to change someone's energetic potential to channel healing energy. And it's just when I hear myself saying that, I go, what are you fucking talking about?
It makes sense and it translates fine. We understand what that is.
So normally the person would come to my house and we would be there and I would be doing symbols and saying mantras in my head and imagining things happening, like their chakras opening and cleaning their energy channel, and they were there in front of me. And then they, 100% of the time, they experience an energy change and they start feeling healing energy coming out of their hands. It's all very strange. I'm very skeptical, but thousands of people on, and they all, you know, they all experience a change in their life and in their ability to heal. Anyway, I did this online, so distant, and there's four levels. Level one, level two, level three, level, and then the teacher level.
Right.
And so when I do online stuff, I tell people, well, you don't have to pay me unless the healing works. You can pay me later. And for the teaching, I said, well, unless you actually feel that you have an increased ability to heal people, don't pay me, because it's, you know, it's an unseen thing. I'm not even there. And anyway, so she went through all three levels, and it's not really cheap.
Right.
So she wouldn't have bothered to. You know, it blows my mind that it's obviously working. Like I said, I'm a skeptic even about what I own. It's obviously working, because why would she bother to go up the levels? And then last Christmas, I asked her if she would want to be a teacher, and I've only taught 20 people to the teacher level in my 20 years of teaching, professionally, and I've never asked anyone if they want to be a teacher. I always wait for them to approach me. I don't even advertise their course. I say, if you're interested, contact me. Anyway, so I asked her, she said, yeah, because she has a very natural ability and she's a great teacher. So I asked her, and she said, yeah, and I said, okay, well, I'll come over and teach you. It's a 3-day course. And she said, okay. So that was Christmas. So I flew over to landed in New York. Had a 3 totally wild days in New York. Painted the town red. Loved the drug laws. Got probably edibles from the first morning. Anyway, so then I spent a 1 week in their home. So this is something I've never stayed in someone's house that I don't know for a week.
Right.
I mean, I'm not physically met. So I met them. We were all amazed at how we were exactly how we thought each other were.
Yeah.
So there were no surprises. It's like we really knew each other. Definitely a soul connection.
Yeah.
So we did. I taught her.
You know, you do know this is why you asked if you wanted to be a teacher, because of that soul connection, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, it's what always really hits me right in the heart is the trust. For the work I do, you know, people are telling me things that they, you know, normally wouldn't tell people. Sharing these deep spiritual experiences with people, and it's the trust that people show. It's quite humbling.
Right.
So I guess deep down, I think maybe I'm not trustworthy or something. That's why it impresses me. That it inspires me. That wow, this person's showing trust in me. It kind of raises me up to be a more trustworthy person. There's an interesting dynamic there. I'm always so grateful for the trust that people will open up, and it inspires me. That's one of the things I love about this job. Anyway, so we did the 3 days. It was a 3-day workshop, but we spread it over like 5 days. We're pretty chilled out.
Right.
They took me to the Newport Jazz Festival.
Oh, fun.
Which was the best single day of music I have ever witnessed. I danced my ass off.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
Yeah, I danced my ass off. It was so amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And that whole area kind of blew my mind. The incredible wealth. That's one of the things that blew me away about America, the disparity of wealth, you know, coming from seeing homeless people and then these old money in Newport.
Yeah.
Like these driveways that are like, you know, a mile long, leading up to these manors.
Oh, yes.
Lawns, you know, acres and acres of just lawn.
Mm.
It was just pretty amazing. Anyway, then another reason was to do this Luminous Warrior retreat.
Right.
So thanks to T-Rex. So when it was decided that I was actually going to go and teach IAF to be a Reiki master, I said, well, while I'm over there, may as well do something else. You know, there's a bunch of things. I want to teach breathwork. I want to teach meditation. I want to teach this EFT, tapping healing technique. I want to teach Reiki.
Yes.
So I call up T-Rex and I say, hey, man, I'm coming to Rhode Island. Let's do something. Let's do something. He says, what do you want to do? And I said, well, look, I want to do a four-day retreat. And I want to do this, 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 and this. I want to give you my greatest hits album. I want to do all the things that I'm confident work and have worked for thousands of people and have worked for me to help change my life. And I want to use that to prepare people for a big psychedelic trip and to help them integrate. And he said, okay, let's do it. Okay. So we did it. We did it. It did not happen. I learned a lot. It didn't happen as nearly in a grand circumstances I'd envisaged. I was a little bit overzealous, but
yeah. Well, yeah. You didn't know. You didn't know. So, like, it go big, think big, or don't think at all. So, you did it though. You may have had bigger and ideas about how it was going to play off, because we always do, but you did it, and you were successful at it because you did it.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I had these kind of delusions of grandeur, like I was going to be welcomed like the Beatles or something. Maybe not that.
The next time, I'm sure it'll happen.
yes, but he set it all up. We did it in this beautiful place called Merck Forest.
Oh.
A place that he'd work. And it's like a maple tree, it's a maple syrup farm. So this whole forest, it's really interesting. I've never seen it. Whole forest is a collaboration between the trees and humans.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, so all these trees are tapped. But because they're tapped, the humans are looking after them, so they're flourishing. So they're giving to the humans, and the humans looking after them.
Right.
And it was a place where the original settlers had come, and in their ignorance, had chopped down the original forest and grazed it.
So they used it
for cattle, but it didn't work, and they all went bankrupt. And this guy bought up all the land, and he replanted these trees. So it's only a 100-year-old forest.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's this really trippy combination of humans and nature.
Where was this? What is this called? I want to look this up.
It's called Merck Forest in Vermont. I think it's northern Vermont. No, southern Vermont.
It's somewhere in Vermont. I'll find it. Okay. Yeah, so this is where you got to hold this retreat yet? Oh my goodness. So
it was, and it's in this. I'm actually giving his kind of experience on his trip So we were in this sugar house. It was the old sugar house.
Mm-hmm.
What the sugar house is, all the trees, all these pipes from the trees get funneled to the sugar house, and then they distill it. They refine it into maple syrup. Now they've got there's some process, right? So basically what it was is all the energy of the forest is being, it was directed to this little cabin next to a river in the forest. So we were literally in the heart of the forest. It was so
Wow.
Had an incredible energy. And at first I was kind of like, yeah, I don't know if that's, I wanted to have it a bit more comfortable. It was, you know, pretty rustic. There's no water. There's got no electricity, no water, no running water. There's a river there, and we had a little filter.
Right.
But it turned out to be absolutely the perfect place, secluded as you could possibly hope. All made out of wood. The birds and animals are all kind of just there, surrounded by trees. And it was incredible. It was turned out absolutely not anything near what I'd planned, but perfect for the four members that experienced it. Yeah, it was quite. I'll be posting I'm still posting the trip reports and the report about the whole retreat within the next couple of days on DMT World. It was incredible.
It sounds incredible. Like just those two things. So after T-Rex, then where did you go?
Okay, so after the retreat, yeah, I just want to say one thing. Everybody had less mushrooms than they normally had. And they all had the most profound mushroom experiences they'd ever had. I want to talk later on about the technique, the John
Hopkins absolutely
protocol that we did, but we'll come back to that. So after that, you know, that was just like, it was kind of life-changing, eye-opening, motivating, inspiring days with that crew. So it was Luke Skywalker, animal energy, and T-Rex.
Right.
And we used Gordotex, Sublime inspired playlist.
Right.
Anyway, I'll get back to that. I definitely want to get back to that John Hopkins protocol.
And then
I left, I went to California.
Okay.
To see an old friend, a dear brother who I've met in several countries, traveled with in several countries. I brought him over to Japan, and he ended up settling down there for 6 years, getting married and having three kids.
Oh.
And then eventually going back to live in California.
Right.
A total legend of a guy. And hung out with him for 10 days. Experienced the first hurricane to hit California in 100 years.
Oh, you were there when that happened. Oh.
We were planning a trip to the Joshua Tree. Got canceled. I was looking out the window, and it was going, oh, there's all this stuff on the TV. Oh, there's mass flooding. And I'm looking out the TV. Japan, and where I live, is the rainfall is incredible here. I mean,
right.
I was going, this causing floods? This is like this is nothing. We could have that. We could have that in the first hours of a rainy day, you know.
Right. Kansas can too. When we get our thunderstorms and our rain showers out here, the heavens open up and the flood. I mean, it just water everywhere. So I can only imagine what Japan's like.
they obviously it's a desert area, right?
They're not used. Yeah,
not used to it. The land is not used to it. And I was going, this is calling flooding. A day later, we went out to Palm Springs.
Yeah.
And it was devastation. We went off road. The roads were closed, but we went, fuck it, let's just go. We moved the road closed signs and we went off in his truck into the desert. We got lost in the desert. I thought I was going to die. It was incredible. We went to Whiskey a Go Go.
Oh, fun.
We both thought we were Jim Morrison back in the day, just after the Doors movie came out. We were in Japan and me and him and two other guys pretended we were Jim Morrison for one crazy summer. We went to the Whiskey a Go Go and it was all more like a museum tour. It was pretty sad,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
They had a cover band play and it was the bands before that were really good, but it was pretty sad. that era is over.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and it doesn't matter how many times they try to recreate it, keep it alive, I think, yeah, it's pretty gone.
Yeah.
Okay, so then what did you do after you were in the floods?
Well, that's it. Well, we hung out in Long Beach and Huntington Beach. He lives in Huntington Beach. We're going into fine restaurants and we went camping down into Malibu Creek. That was the first night I arrived in LAX.
Right.
And he took me straight out to Malibu Creek State Park.
Oh, my.
Which is amazing. We hiked up into, where they filmed MASH.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, it looks like they filmed MASH here. You're expecting helicopters. I mean, any moment. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. There's a nice little water hole there. It's also kind of semi-arid, totally different environment from what I'm used to.
Right.
So that was amazing. It was really amazing. The nature blew my mind away. The desert, the Palm Springs area especially.
Oh, yeah.
Blew my mind away.
So then what did we go to?
That was pretty much it. I skipped through quite a lot there on the tour. That was the one.
But that was your trip, your round trip that you did there. So yeah, now let's go back and let's talk about some of what you actually did in detail. So let's talk about the mushrooms first.
Okay, so I wanna, yeah.
Yes, let's talk about the mushrooms first.
Okay. Well, so it was this luminous warrior retreat. So what is a luminous warrior, and how I want to kind of talk about how that came to me.
Yes.
So last autumn. Yeah, last autumn. I've been teaching quite a few people, initiating people into DMT and doing LSD therapy, following the Hopkins Griffiths protocol.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, have you seen or read much about that? Or
I have, but I don't know it in depth. I just know I know about it because you've mentioned it a few times, so I went and kind of read some different things. But now I would like to hear from you what exactly this is. What is it about it? Why is this something that you're wanting to incorporate in what you're doing? And basically, then how are you doing that? So let's talk about, first of all, what is it? What is this technique that you are actually talking about?
Okay, so why I got into it? So just flashback to 30 years ago, I'm in Goa on a beach.
30 years ago? Okay.
1992. I'm in Goa on a beach. I'd taken undisclosed amount of LSD. It was an LSD punch.
Oh, okay.
And it was, by what my experience, it was probably something like 1,000 mics or something. I don't know. I had a complete ego disillusion, one with the entire universe. I was an ant, a flower, a tree, a rock, the whole shebang.
Oh, you went through the whole cycle. Yeah.
Okay, so that put me onto my spiritual path. Sure. Because I was like, I thought I cheated. I thought I cheated because we didn't have all the information that we have now, right?
Right.
So I thought, why, how do I integrate that and how do I get back there without drugs? So that's what pushed me into this meditation and the yoga and healing and et cetera. Doing
were you ever successful in getting there?
No, I never got close.
Without drugs, I never got close. So anybody that tells me that I can, I'm going to be like, I don't know. Because I don't think I could ever get into the exact state that I do when I'm in my trip mode. Yes, you're in a different place. You're in a different place in your brain. You're in a different place in your body. Like everything is, it's a shift. It's shifted. When I'm not in that realm, that under that way of being, I can't receive the same, whatever it is, the data, the information I get from the psychedelic use that I do non-psychedelic. Does that make sense? Like I don't absorb the same way.
Okay. Well, that being said, within the last 2 years, since getting into the breath work, the long form holotropic rebirthing type of breath work, conscious connected breathing, I've had two complete non-dual experiences. Not dislike a 5-MeO DMT trip. Twice I've had that. Right. I've had a what I assume was a 5-MeO DMT experience with some gym jam that I made.
Possible, yes.
Totally non-dual. I mean, there's, you know, it's either non-dual or it's dual. There's no
right
kind of. It was non-dual. Like there's nothing there. There's no one to comment on it. There's no one to experience it. You only understand it when you're coming back.
Right.
So that was with breath work, and I've had full-on visions, and I've had with breath work, that same breath work, I've experienced being inside my mother and experiencing unconditional love before birth. Like she wasn't throwing judgments on me, oh, you're a boy or anything like that. I experienced that, and even when I talk about it now, I can feel it in my cells that I'm loved. So I think it definitely is possible.
Right.
Anyway, so then I came back 4 years ago, skipped to 4 years ago when I came back to and joined DMT world and realized that the psychedelics and realized shamanism was a legitimate path to enlightenment is the word I would use.
Right.
Big words. But then I got onto DMT world and I was realizing, listening to people's trip reports, reading people's experiences, and how much I was taking and the experiences and the ease of integration I was having with using psychedelics. And I realized, okay, so my, you know, whatever 25 years of doing meditation and breath work and fasting and doing all these things has given me a base that is perfect for using the psychedelic.
Right.
That's why I started to try to teach people on DMT world meditation, breath work, et cetera, et cetera. I think, listen, guys, if you're using these tools, they are a set made in heaven. Every shaman in every culture is done this kind of fasting, done this kind of cleansing, done this breath work, done some kind of meditation. And that's why they're the shamans. So I thinking, yeah, okay. And then the Hopkins Rupert's protocol comes out. And what they did, so John Hopkins had been using psilocybin, as we all know, for right. People who are gonna die, people's addictions, etc. And they knew, okay, we know clinically proven what everybody else knows, but now scientifically proven that psilocybin works. Okay, no one listening is going to deny that, right?
Right. They just wanted to make sure that it was publicly announced. Like you said, it's something that people like us in our community have always known. And so, yes, they're the ones that were like, and because they had the accreditation that they could could be the ones to do this and not people attack them or look down at them because of the accreditation. So yes. So go for, yes, go on with what it is. Keep going what it is.
So there's also a vast body of knowledge and proof and data that meditation is also good for you on physical, mental, spiritual. That's, you know, we all knew that, and now Western science is proving it, okay? Neuroscience especially.
Right, right.
Okay, so John Hopkins said, okay, what if we combine the two? Okay, so that's now they piqued my interest. Yeah, that's what I want to hear, because I'm skeptical about even my own findings, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I see Gordo takes synopsis of it.
Right.
Which he actually got a letter from them congratulating him on how well he synopsized it.
Nice.
So I read that, and basically they said they have a control group, people who did psilocybin only, people who did meditation only, and then I'm not sure, I forget, if there are people who did nothing at all.
Right.
And then they did this spiritual program that's called the passage meditation,
right,
which is basically an Indian dude taught it. It was the first spiritual meditation course that was accredited by a major American university. It's called the passage meditation, and it's a number of spiritual practices, and the meditation part, obvious things, try to be nice to people, stop looking at media, instead of watching media, read spiritual teachings, etc. You're setting up your brain to be positive and to have this very high consciousness.
They're setting up you to be more receptive. Yeah.
Yeah, you're changing the diet of your brain.
Right. Because so positive, actually, you can take in more in a positive mode than if you are in a negative mode. Yeah. Because you're accepting instead of rejecting.
Exactly. Yep. So they gave this other group, people who'd not meditated much before and then had very little psychedelic experience, they gave them this passage meditation that they would do once or twice a day for maximum 30 minutes. And they did that for 1 month, and then they gave them one dose of psilocybin. And they had this huge number of parameters that they checked on personality traits. And, you know, how much you're out.
Do you know what the dose?
They have this Goldilocks dose that they worked out, which was about 30 milligrams of psilocybin. Of course, they're not using mushrooms, right?
Standardized dose.
I think, don't quote me, but I think it was 30 milligrams, which is equivalent to about, you know,
yeah,
I think it was 2.5 to 3 grams of golden teachers, I think it was.
Okay.
So they're using, you know, it's a study, so they have to have a standardized dose.
Right. So, yeah, that's why I asked. Because, like, I don't know what a standard. I don't know how what my standardized dose is. Not that standardized dose. So that's why I asked.
It's kind of impossible for us to know how much, you know, each mushroom is different. Each cluster is different. Each is different. We're different, so, you know.
Right. Okay, so.
So they give this control group, and they have this a whole lot of different parameters where they ask not only the people who have the experience how they change, but they're asking their significant others and people in their family and people around them to say, did they improve on this? Did they improve on their outlook? Are they less irritable? Are they, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the quote that I love is, after all, it's not altered traits that matter. It's altered states. It's not altered traits. It's not altered states. It's altered traits.
Yeah.
And then they prove conclusively that this spiritual practice combined with the psilocybin is better than the spiritual practice or the psilocybin alone. So I'm there, yes. That is exactly what I've been thinking for the last 4 years, 3 years. Okay, well, I'm going to jump on that. And so I studied up on that. And the thing is, that is John Hopkins, and most of the stuff out there is aimed at newcomers, right? The vast majority of courses out there and the articles out there, the Netflix documentaries out there, they're all aimed at the people who've not really done psychedelics, right?
Right.
So I thought, well, DMT world, that's my community, the people I want to tweak this for, people who are already experienced.
Right. Exactly. So
my approach was to use all these other techniques that are a bit more advanced than the passage meditation, but includes the passage meditation. So the goal is to give a person the highest chance of having transcendental experience.
Right.
And they know by their studies, but that it's the transcendental experience that causes the healing, that causes the life changing, great changes. It's not the dose, it's the experience of this coming out of the ego and having a higher perspective.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. I mean, that's the perfect way of explaining it. That is exactly what it is. That's my fear with some of the ways that we're going in our psychedelic community, that aspect is not, that aspect is going to get lost in the shuffle of some of the commercial stuff that we see happening, the words therapy and the words clinical and those types of things. I hope that there's not a disconnect of exactly what you talked about. Like, that's what needs to be, these new people that are coming into this, you even said this, our community is the people you want to do this with, because we get it. Like, we get it. What you just said is like exactly, we understand that. Now, how do we make sure that the new ones that are being introduced to this in these other avenues and these lights that are now, these pathways that are coming about, we know people have good intentions. We know other people will have bad intentions. How do we make sure that we pass on what you just described to these people that are going to be doing this for the first time?
I'm not sure. I think it comes down to the people find what they're ready for. In my experience, it's very hard to teach and to expect beginners to come into an advanced.
Think about how, so here you go. Think about this. We traveled back 30 years. You took me 30 years back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So it's taken the to where you're at now to get to where you are mentally.
Yeah. Like,
okay. So we weren't force fed. We weren't shoved. This was not shoved into our faces. Like, I had to go and look for things, learning my journey. But now now that things are mainstreaming, and now things, legalities and the decriminalization, like especially here in the United States, like this is a thing. I don't know how it is in other countries. But in the United States, where we are most affected, like they are, it's no longer, you know, your self journey. You're finding it. Oh, you know, we always say, well, it's going to come to you when it's, you know, going to come to you. But now it's now in front of everybody's face all the time. It's being shoved at them. It's being told this is going to be the cure. We're hearing these words tied to these substances that we in our community hold in a different light. And I just don't know. This is what conflicts me right now with the psychedelics and where the whole thing is going. I'm at great affliction, because what I'm holding on to is not what I see is coming at me in the future. And I hope that, like, what you're doing and how you're going about this and the understanding of the integration of utilizing that one of the substances with the meditation, because that's grounding. That's keeping the grounding. It's keeping the internal self, like, you're connecting. It's kind of the mind, body, spirit. You're keeping that fluid connection, and you're tying these substances with these other practices. Great. Again, exactly. That's what I'm hoping moves forward for our future more than what my fear is what's going on in the future. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but what you're doing is what we need to make sure keeps going forward. That's what I want to tell you. I think it's a great plan, and I think your vision is needed.
I really hear your concern, and I can really relate to that. When I started to teach yoga, actually, it was a good timing for me. Yoga had just become a word. It had just entered the vocabulary in Japanese society. I'd already been doing it for 15 years. So I was at a place where I figured I could teach.
How long have you been in Japan?
I've been in Japan for, I came in 1988 the first time. 1989.
Okay.
I pretty much have been based here since then.
Okay.
So 35 years, 34 years.
Okay.
It's been my base. You know, I've traveled away a lot and here and there 6 months to a year living other places. But it's been my base pretty much for the last 3.5 decades.
So Japan is home. Okay.
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty adaptable. I've realized when we moved to this new house now, I was thinking, geez, I move a lot. This is the 26th address I've lived at, and it's my wife's 22nd. So we're kind of nomadic. I'm pretty much at home. Wherever my hat is, I don't have any hair, so I need a hat all the time. So my hat's always climbing. I really do understand your concern about that. I think there's some kind of way of framing that might alleviate your concern about those things. So about this yoga thing. So when I started teaching yoga, all the yoga, I should have been teaching meditation, and I wanted to teach Reiki, but that was a bit far for people. So I used yoga, which had become mainstream, as the welcoming door, the door
sure. for people. Oh yeah, because it would all segue eventually into each other. I can see that yoga was the best choice. You're right.
So people, it's 99.9% of my clients here are women. And they will all come, oh, will this, will I lose weight? Will it improve my figure? And I'm like, Jesus, I'm not here to improve your figure, sweetheart. I'm trying to get you enlightened. I'm trying to get you that you don't really care about those. You know, you're not worried about the
right, experience. Right. I'm trying to get rid of that part of you. Yes, yes. Hmm.
So that it was not a very good business model. I should have just go. But what I see now down the track is that the yoga, even at that very, health club orientated, physical orientated thing, it did cause a shift. It did open a door for people to go deeper. And then eventually the next thing, spirituality became a
work. Right.
Yeah. Now you've got meditation, you've got breathwork. So I think that even as a psychedelics come in and it's clinical, and that the other thing is about the shamans, they say you need a shaman for ayahuasca or whatever, but the shamans will say, the shaman is only doing 5% of the work.
Right. Oh, yes.
The medicine is going to go beyond open people up regardless of the, in some way, you know, regardless of the form it's given in. Yeah, you know, these, at least on that, those university level studies that I've looked at, mostly just John Hopkins, to be honest.
Right.
They seem to be doing it really well.
Yes, I agree. I've read a lot. I've seen a lot. I try to keep up just on what's happening, because there is a lot of out on the edge that you hear that is just some, it's, I think it's more opinion based rather than news. So I try to go in further into sources that are actually doing stuff like John Hopkins.
Yeah. I think all those guys, the guys that are doing it there, Bill Griffiths and all that, they're all, you know, I think they're all very wise guys. They're very chill. They're taking the lessons, the mistakes from the 60s. So, you know, thanks, you know, Timothy, they're looking at Timothy Leary and stuff he did.
Right. Well, and we do know that they are going back through some of Timothy Leary's research. Like, we do know that there's a lot of studies that were going on back in the 60s when they shut things down. So I know I read some different things saying that they have gone back and looking at some of that data, some of the things that they were doing. So that's hopeful. It's just, it's really too bad that it took this long to like get to where we're at with this. I mean, and it's exciting, but it's also moving really, really fast. And I just, that's kind of, you know, 4 years ago, 4 years, just in 4 years alone. Okay. So we started DMT World because on Facebook group that we had, community standards had changed. They had updated them or something. The DMT Facebook group that we came from is the oldest DMT group that's on Facebook. It's like been around like 17 years. And so they took it down. And when they took it down, it was like, that was when we realized that we needed a place to be that wasn't going to be, you know, censored, we weren't going to be told what we can and can't do and those types of things. So that's when we moved. And, you know, then you couldn't even really talk about half the stuff that we talk about, even in DMT World. We had to be even more, you know, now we can get a little bit more laxed on certain things because laws are changing. That's probably one of the hardest things for me to keep up with right now, I'll be honest, is laws. Because we utilize the U.S. federal, you know, that's what we abide by, note with the no legal sourcing. But things are getting less and less. California just legalized or decriminalized the psychedelics. New York, we just found out that New York actually when they passed the cannabis bill, that they actually made an amendment and took any psychedelics and mushrooms off their controlled list. So therefore it allows, and they voted on it and passed this law that nobody really knew about, but it kind of just slipped in there. So like there's things that are happening that it's like we're moving super fast, at least in the United States. This is my question I have for you. What are your rules and laws and regulations over where you're at when it comes to psychedelics?
Wow. Okay. Easy. They're all totally and utterly forbidden with extreme penalties. And there's very little difference between, I think there's no difference between having 0.1 gram of cannabis and having crystal meth. There's no difference. It's just one blanket law. I would say maybe in the next 700 or 800 years, you might have a legalization here. they could be a bit extreme. I don't know. They did. I've heard actually they're talking about it, legalizing cannabis. They allowed CBD from a couple of years ago. So let's see. There's a guy. The laws are, basically, it's very simple. It's all illegal. totally illegal.
Well, you and me are in the same boat because Kansas, it's all illegal too. So we just got hemp and CBD legal here in just Kansas. So I feel for you. So what happens to you guys over there if you get caught with anything?
Well, I have had several friends who foreign fans who've gone to jail. They usually go for 2-3 months. And then they get kicked out.
They get kicked out? Is that what you just said? They kick them out? They just are like, you're done, and you go?
You're done. If they're foreigners, that's they go. And they even, I know a guy who had he got caught with like 0.1 gram, a little bit of leaf or something that was on the floor of his car. And he got kicked out, and he had a wife and a kid, and he can never come back.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, it's pretty horrific. And they're weird that, you know, Japan has like 99% conviction rate.
No, I didn't know that.
They catch you, people just, whether they've done something or not, they confess because the mental game. Like I had a friend, my very best friend, his name is Greg. So the reporting robot made me think of him. He's been my friend since we were in grade 5 elementary school.
Right.
We're still friends. He lives just an hour or two down the road from me. We made DMT together. We do all these things together. Anyway, that guy who got kicked out, who got caught with 0.1 of a gram,
mm-hmm.
His nickname was Crazy Chris. So he was crazy. He was taking medication from, you know, various mental issues he had. Good guy, but he had some issues. Anyway, they put him inside and kind of a mental torture. He said that Craig had given him the weed, which was or wasn't the case. Anyway, we won't know that. Anyway, so they came round to him, to his house, searched his house at 6 o'clock in the morning one morning, searched his house, didn't find anything, and then took him away, and they could keep him for 3 weeks in jail without charge.
What?
Without charges. So without charges, they kept him for three weeks.
3 weeks. They didn't find anything and they didn't charge him, but they kept him for 3 weeks. Okay.
Certainly crazy guy. One guy who was under psychiatric therapy had said his name. One guy who'd been who was, in their eyes, a convicted drug user and crazy. That guy's word put this other guy, my buddy, in jail for 3 weeks. And they've got these fluorescent lights, and they keep him in this little cell with no natural light, with no exercise, and the lights were on 24 hours a day, and they would come and wake him up at any time, like 3 o'clock, random, and then interrogate him.
Oh, my gosh.
And my buddy's a very special dude. we'd often talk about, you know, if we ever got busted, just it's like a meditation retreat. He goes, I remember that conversation. So he just went to full on meditation mode.
Well,
and by the end of the time, like he teaches English. Half the guards were his English students. They had to kick out the prosecutor because Craig had befriended him so much. So they had to get the judge had told him, and I went in, I volunteered, I called him up. I called up the police. I said, hey, look, I want to give you information about Craig. And this is a funny story. So I go in. Of course, I hide everything that I've got that's dodgy. I go in, I want to come in. I go into the police station. I'm in this, with a bright light looking at you in this soundproof room, a tiny little room. And I said, I want to have a translator. Of course, I speak Japanese, but I want to have that buffer zone. I go in there for 2 days, and on the first day, you know, they're asking me all these questions, and this friend of mine, we have telepathy. Right. We've met each other in random cities around the world, not knowing we were each other were there several times. Right. We met like I'd go into a convenience store waiting for the toilet in a city where I probably wouldn't normally be, and I'm waiting for the toilet and he walks out. I mean, I can talk about a dozen stories. I'll call him and there's no sound. Our phones connect as we're calling each other at exactly the same moment. It's like, anyway.
Yeah.
So the story, you know, when you're doing stuff like this, you stick to as much truth as possible and you only change the details, right?
Right.
But anyway, the story I came up with about it was exactly the same story that he came up with. That's what got him out.
Nice.
On the first day there, I could have got an Academy Award nominating myself. I go in there, I go, look, he's such a fine Catholic and he's an upstanding citizen, and you know, and then I said, but if it's true that he's on drugs, I'll be heartbroken and I'll have to disown him. And I actually started crying.
Oh my.
And then that was the day. And then they asked me to come in the next day. And then the next day I go, I was thinking about it last night. And if it is true that he's lied to me and he's taking these terrible drugs, I'll forgive him and I'll support him until he's healed. And I cried again.
Oh.
I actually had tears rolling down my eyes. And anyway, he got out. They let him out. And so, you can Google it, it's like 99.9% or something of people who ever get arrested, they get convicted because Japanese society is so brainwashing. It's that, like, if someone, you know, in a power of authority says something, you just say, yeah.
Yeah.
They say, you did it. And eventually they say, yeah, I did it. And he's that 0.1% that got out.
Oh, then, wow.
The drug laws are atrocious, at least.
But you don't seem to have a problem getting anything, substances, so that's good.
That's the thing is, on the positive side is I've never heard of anyone being busted for mushrooms, LSD, or DMT. It's all cocaine.
Cocaine, meth, things like that.
Man, I'm not a cannabis user generally.
Yeah.
So, and I'd never would keep it at my house because the cannabis is that you've got to have something to smoke it from. It smells.
Right.
Dogs can get it. People talk. It takes up space. You know, acids.
Yep.
The only time I've heard people getting caught with like acid and stuff like that is when they were caught with something else.
Oh, yeah.
Using cannabis, and then they found that as well. So I'm kind of, I hope that I'm kind of safe.
I think you're as safe as I am here. So, I mean, like you really are talking the way that I live my world here in Kansas. So yeah, as long as you, and that's just it. If you're smart about it and if you're smart about it and you don't go talk about it with the wrong people, you know, you just, if you're cautious, they have no reason to check you or you don't get in trouble. I mean, you might be a little rowdy, but whatever.
shouldn't do podcast.
They don't know who we are. It's fine.
Yeah.
So your little group of people that you take pictures of and post all your naked pictures when they're, who takes those pictures? Your naked butt pictures when you're on?
Okay, but that's a good question. So this is something I often think is really funny.
Right.
Especially like when I'm sitting there meditating, right?
Right.
Probably 9 times out of 10, it's me resting my phone up against a rock and running, getting into a zen in like 9 seconds. I can get into perfect zen mode in 9 seconds. So
I'm so glad I asked that question.
That's a spiritual practice in itself.
You need like I don't know. You need like a like one of those stands, like the ones that fold clear up that it doesn't take up much space, but you can just be like.
The challenge is finding a tree or a rock.
I thought you were going to tell me that Honey is the one that takes those pictures. No.
She's usually in the movie, right? The other 10% of the time is my Honey.
Okay.
She does it. And from now on, I'm gonna make a note where there is a selfie. I'm gonna call them Zen houses, Zen selfies, or by my love.
There you go. That's hilarious. It's great that she is such a great sport, and is, I'm sure she's like, sure, I'll take these pictures for you. As long as she's not like, you want me to take these pictures again?
She likes my butt. Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad.
I haven't done a butt photo for a while.
No, you haven't.
I'll do a birthday butt photo. It's sagging a little bit. I'm going to be 56, and maybe I'm a little bit shy because it's not quite as 30 as it was a couple of years ago.
Did you say you're going to be 56? Is that what you said?
I'll be 56 tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So tomorrow, your tomorrow or my tomorrow?
Well, that's a good question. The 10th.
Okay. Your tomorrow. Okay. Well, happy birthday on the 10th.
Yeah.
And what are you going to go do?
We're just going to chill. We're going to go find I'm actually not feeling that well today.
Yeah.
We're going to go find just find a new place. We're going to go up on like I said, there could be a typhoon. I mean, there is a typhoon this way. So we're just going to find a secluded beach or something somewhere. There's a lot of kind of undiscovered coastline north of us. Just take an hour or two drive and just kind of go for an adventure, find something new.
And just kind of chill.
And then just chill. Yeah, we'll get a nice bottle of wine, I think, and have a little bit of acid, I guess. My wife's not a big drug taker. She'll take a microdose.
Does she partake with you when you guys, when you do?
She's naturally psychedelic. She like, I'll come back, like, after ayahuasca or some big experience and go, wow. And
she can feel it. Is she susceptible to you?
She says, why do you need drugs to realize that? She's like, drugs are immediately going, right.
Right.
You're never impressed by it. She's like, yeah, well, of course.
My daughter is this way. When I trip on mushrooms and she sits in the room with me, she can feel the trip off me, and it affects her. Like, and basically she'll act, I mean, it's like she's tripping, and she'll tell you she feels like she's tripping even when she hasn't taken anything. It's just whatever comes off of me when I'm in my, and it's especially with mushrooms. It's not as much with acid. It's definitely with mushrooms. Like, and she can control my energy. Oh, she can get my energy really spun. She can get me to the point where, like, it almost makes me nauseous because things are spinning so fast. She can sit there and she can change the energy in the room when we're together. When I'm on mushrooms, she's very, very tapped in. And especially when she's not on anything, it's crazy.
She sounds like a shaman.
Well, this girl doesn't know what her magic is yet, and when she figures it out, she's going to be very dynamic. That's what I can tell you about her.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I'm mom, so it's probably not.
Right. Let's talk about, you wanted to talk about Reiki. You wanted to go into a little bit more detail about Reiki.
you have a very good Reiki master there in Rhode Island, for anybody who's listening. I totally trust her to teach you Reiki. So Let me just tell you a Reiki story about psychedelics.
Yes.
That involves my wife. So it was the second time doing ayahuasca, and I made it myself.
Okay.
So it was an analog Syrian root and Mimosa hostilis root bark. And a buddy, much more experienced in ayahuasca and pretty much all psychedelics than me, came from Nagasaki, a guy from California. Anyway, but he came from across the island. It's about a 6-hour drive. He came all the way over to help me make it and to sit for me.
Wow. Nice.
So we brewed it up. We had an amazing day. We went hiking. We went to a hot spring. We went in this natural sauna, like a steam. It's basically a small log cabin plonked on top of a geyser, basically, out in this massive forest. Anyway, we had a perfect kind of setup for it. It was in a great mood. I had this special healing room that had two massive glass windows looking out into a forest. Perfect. Setting, everything's perfect. But I'm not really sure about the dose. You know, you've made it yourself. Yeah, a little bit. You know, how much do I take? We knew the theory. I think it was 6 grams of, I made two doses. Six grams of Syrian root, was it 3 grams? 6 grams, which is two doses, and then whatever it was of the root bark. But you don't want to take too much, right? Especially ayahuasca.
Right.
Well, especially anything, I guess. But so I take like, and it comes on quick, and I puke 15 minutes in. So I drink the rest of it. There, you know, lying, and I'm getting some very dull kind of visuals. I see the serpent, but it's more like a dull neon electric kind of thing. Like the first time I had it was a full on. Very ayahuasca type, vivid colors, painted like huge, massive serpents. But this is more like just a dull kind of LEDs. It's pretty nothing much. And just, I felt dark, depressed. I was just going in the shadow.
Right.
And then that was for about 2 hours in, and my buddy had gone off for a break. And I'm in the shadow. I'm totally just in touch with my darkest, most disgusting self. I'm just full of self-loathing, and it's horrible. It's absolutely, you know. And I'm straight. I'm absolutely stone cold sober. And I'm thinking, shit, I've not taken enough, and there's not enough to push me through the tunnel.
Right.
Into the light, and I go and have a shower, and I come out. It's winter. My wife and him, we had a big, like a wood stove, and they were sitting there talking on the sofa about, and I came out and I go, well, I'm done, and I'm depressed, and I think I'm going to be stuck in a deep depression for a long time. I'm feeling pretty like I just want to die. And I say to my wife, who's can do Reiki, I say, can you just come and give me some Reiki food, of course. So we go back into the healing room. My buddy's lying there. My honey's there. The dog's there.
Mm-hmm.
I lie down. And the first Reiki position, standard kind of Reiki position when you go into it, get someone, you're allowing yourself to become a pipe.
Right.
So there's no doer. It's a very much a meditative thing. There's no doer. There's no intention to heal.
Right.
The Reiki, what I love about Reiki is it's, the way I put it, it's allowing natural balance to occur naturally.
Right.
So the metaphor I use is that if you have a farm and you want to let it go back to nature, you want it to, the natural balance, to occur, to come back, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do if you want it to go back to nature?
What do you
yeah, what do you do if you have, say you have a garden,
right?
And you just want it to be natural. What do you do?
You
don't just, do anything,
right? You just let it do its thing.
So that's the stance. That's the mind you're trying to get into with Reiki.
Yes, I understand. I have a friend who is a Reiki master that I go to and work with at times. Which I think is lovely. That's why I think it's very fascinating that this is what you do, because I know a little bit about it. So yes. I'm with you. Go on.
So I'm lying there, you know, I guess suicidal. I'm in one of the darkest moments of my life. That's how I'm feeling. But it's not that I'm having a bad trip. It's like I'm sober, and that's what I'm left with.
Right.
So I lie down, face up, and the first position you probably wear normally when you do a session is the person's sitting at your above your head, putting their hands over your eyes, over your third eye, from your head, from your forehead. You can imagine forehead going with the palms over the eyes and going down the nose. As soon as she placed her hands there, pure white light, but more in the form of lightning, rushed down my body, and I could feel it coming down like a wave. And it was like what I imagine a woman's orgasm is. It was just shimmering white light, and it was as though my whole body was vibrating as the lightning, and as the lightning's going.
Yep.
And it's just pure, like being an ocean of electric love, something like that. Like the whole thing is going shimmering. And then she's doing a classic Reiki session, and she's going down my body. And each time she moves her hands, it alternates between that and utter darkness and despair. So I was going from heaven to hell, heaven to hell, heaven to hell.
And
the last position she got was it. She does is like as she's now sitting at my feet, holding both my ankles, like cupping my ankles. And now I'm just having this. It was probably like 20 minutes of just going, just having a love orgasm. Just like, and just in this infinite ocean of electrified love.
Is nice.
That's good to describe it. And then Steve said, oh, look, I'm go out and sit there. I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm not just like leaving there going, oh, I want to, you know, like have a cigarette and go with a good thing. Anyway, so I come out eventually. Like I'm still floating, right? Like I'm just like, whoa, like
right,
just after globe. Like I've been reborn, right?
Right.
She's sitting there, glum, like the exact opposite, and she's not taking anything. Remember, right?
But she transferred energy.
What has happened is she became privy to my darkest side.
Yeah.
And all my negative feelings towards her. You know, we're married, there's animosities, there's things unsaid.
Yes.
You know, she's seen it.
Yeah.
But you know, ayahuasca, truth is painful, but it's beautiful. It shows you truth. And she had this total ayahuasca experience where although it was painful to have seen all this, it was true.
Right.
Unadulterated truth. And we sat there and talked and talked and talked. We said, well, you know, and now I'm experiencing is pure love for her. Pure and we actually said, well, maybe, I'm not going to rush into this, but maybe because of this incredible love we've realized for each other, maybe it's better if we're separate.
Right.
And there was no, normally I would just say, no way, that's not possible. But this, that thought of being separate was coming from a total space of love.
Right.
And she, and we ended up with our relationship just reached another level after that. We're still together. But,
right.
3-4 years ago. So that was the power of Reiki with the psychedelic. So I thought I'd share that experience. So yeah, that was saved my ass, I guess.
Yes, obviously. You needed it. You needed it for some reason. Wouldn't have happened.
Reiki is, I've been trying since that acid experience. That was, I was, 24. So that's 32 years I've been totally focused on this spiritual journey and tried everything, aromatherapy and this and this and that. And Reiki is one of the four things that has stood the test of time with me that works for me. And it's next to meditation, it's the most basic, grounded, simple. It's the simple things that stay. It's so simple.
Right.
And it gives you, I feel like it's like going on a toll road for your spiritual life. It's like you pay a little bit. I was totally against Reiki when I first started getting into. I got kicked out of Japan. I got out before they deported me. That's another story. But I was thinking, what am I going to do? And I'd already started on this healing journey. I've been living like a monk in the mountains, doing yoga and meditation 4 or 5 hours a day. And anyway, so I'd already experienced energy coming out of my hands. It had awakened the healing ability and the desire to share it. So I had to come out of that.
Okay, so hang on just a minute. So up to this point, you don't believe that Reiki is a thing. Can do it. Did you believe in it or that you couldn't do it?
I believed in it, but I didn't see why you needed to pay for it. Maybe I was just too stingy. Maybe I was just too stingy. But I didn't see, I was doing it naturally. I was started massaging people with no technique or anything. And they were saying, and my pain is gone, blah, blah, blah. And I could feel the energy. I could feel the energy in my hands. I was starting to play with energy. I was starting to see auras and stuff. And I was only organic. I was doing fasting. I was doing crazy, like drinking 2 liters of salt water in the morning and puking it up. sticking rope in my nose and cleaning out all these crazy yoga practices. I was full on. And then, so I'd done all this cleaning and I was getting all these kind of psychic abilities.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, why do I need to pay for that? That's stupid. And I was kind of had this Buddhist kind of aesthetic kind of mind that money, I hadn't worked out that money was just energy, and I had a negative thing towards money and that's just materialism. And what do I need to pay? And anyway, I left Japan. I went and did all these retreats in Thailand and all these temples for 3 months.
How old were you at this point in time?
I was 27 or 28.
Okay, that explains it. Okay, go on.
It was my Saturn return. Ended up being about that later. A big disruption. And there was a girlfriend that kind of broke up with me. It's a long, long story. But I went to Thailand and I did all these retreats, and then I did a 3-month Thai massage course in a temple in Chiang Mai. And of course, these days I was totally pure. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't do anything. I was just pure.
Right.
And And then everyone I met, and it actually happened in Miyazaki before I left, these people that they were saying, oh, Jeff, you should, I'll skip that long story how I met, but it was a really incredible meeting, how we met and then we met again. Okay, you should do Reiki. Yeah, whatever. And I had a Reiki session from them. And I thought, yeah, it's nothing special. It's like, and what I realized now, Reiki, when you're feeling, if nature's already there, Reiki harmonizes things. So if you're in harmony, people who are quite healthy and happy, they don't feel Reiki as much as someone who really needs it.
Right.
That's my experience. It flows much more powerfully when people are out of balance than when they aren't.
Right.
And then I met all these people in all these temples and on them, because you're doing massage, so those people are doing Reiki and everyone's going, Reiki, oh, you should do Jeff, you should do Reiki. I'm like, fucking Reiki, what is this? Get away from me. And end up going back to Australia and going from Perth, where I live in the southwest, to 5,000 kilometres north, to this 1 month epic road trip up there and opening a massage shop.
Okay.
And the guy next to me was he had a factory, but what he was selling, all this wrought iron stuff, like he'd make wrought iron chairs and gates and stuff like that.
Ah, okay.
But he was a Reiki master.
Reiki's been following you around, obviously, huh?
So I start doing massage, and because I wasn't into money, I felt like I was a prostitute if I said, look, I'm going to massage you 30 minutes, you give me 30 bucks.
Right.
So my sign was massage by donation. Okay. I'll massage you until you're relaxed or until the pain's gone and you can give me what you want. Just by donation. And it was a very good business model. This was a good business model.
Oh.
Because, yeah, it the word got around that this guy, he was just massaging. Anyway, so. But after a day of massage, sometimes I couldn't move. I'd be like shaking on the ground because you get someone who had cancer or someone with a mental issue and it would just be like a black hole. Because I was opening my energy. I was there, yeah, take my energy. I want to heal you. So my heart was open. It was sucking it was still probably ego-based, I don't know. It was sucking my microcosm of energy.
Yeah.
And what Reiki is the macrocosm. Instead of your bat, you're not using a battery, you're connected to the mains.
Right.
So this guy, he would see me and he would say, man, you've got to do Reiki, bro. You've got to do Reiki. Instead of being tired, you'll be energized by it. And I'm like, yeah, well, I don't know. He said, listen, if you give me and my wife a massage, and I was with my, turned out to be my ex-wife, my first ex-wife, I'll teach you, and she was massaging with me, I'll teach you and her Reiki one. Okay, that's okay, that's okay, I don't have to pay money for it, that sounds good, that's an energy exchange, yeah, good.
Right.
And as soon as I'd finished it, I was going, oh shit, I'm going to have got to master this. And then my sales, the time it took, I could do twice as many people a day and I was getting twice as much donation. So it worked on that level too. Like people noticed the difference. And then I was sold with Reiki. So that I think that's the beautiful thing, is it's a plus plus.
Right.
Often like with massage, the other person feels good, but the person doing it gets depleted. So it's
right, plus minus. Exactly. Oh yes. Oh yes. But oh yes.
Reiki is like a smell. It's like a smell. The more you do it, it's infinite, right?
That's awesome. Well, I'm not going to keep you much longer because I know it will be your birthday soon and you have plans, but I just want to tell you, I've really enjoyed sitting here just talking to you. Where is your dialect? Where is that? You live in Japan, but
Australia.
Australia. So you're born in Australia and made your way to Japan. Is that right?
So, okay. That's a little story. I was in Ghana.
Yeah.
I was born in Ghana to Indian parents. So my first nationality was Indian.
Okay.
And then we lived in Wales for a year when I was 3 to 4, and then from Australia till 5 till 20. And but my parents grew up during the Raj. So that's the British, it was a British colony, but the ancestors are all the colonizers of India. So there's French, there's Dutch, there's Portuguese, and there's English.
Okay.
So you understand why I'm not very stable.
Yes. Yes, I gotcha. Yes. Yeah. It's awesome. I love this. I love sitting talking to you. This, I will tell you, this will not be the only interview we do. We were going to do this again because I want to keep up with your journey with the Illuminated Warriors, what more you're doing with it, if there's things you guys are going to be putting your heads together and trying to do other things with. Maybe in the future we can bring on you and like T-Rex or somebody, and we can have more of a group session, and we can talk about some of the stuff that you guys are looking at or working towards or whatever is going on in your guys' life. Because I really enjoy getting to sit and talk with you guys, because for 4 years, I've just been this person on the other side of a computer. And now we're getting to actually communicate and talk, and it's like getting to know each other even better in a more intimate way, in a closer way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I can't believe you're one of the few, at least I think you're the only admin that I hadn't actually spoken to before this.
Right,
I've been
listening
to this, so I've been getting to know you through the podcast.
Right.
And I'm not disappointed. You are very much happy KB in my mind. Yeah, it's really beautiful to finally actually talk to you. Because, yeah, I mean, you always bring that happy vibe to the site, and it's so much a part of you that, I mean, you can see that it's an extension of you. I don't think I can pay someone a higher compliment than that, because BNP World is, I always say, it's the love zone. I don't know if there's a better place in the whole of the vast internet. And it's certainly helped me exponentially on my journey. And I think you will never know the breadth of your influence, your positive influence on the world. I'd really like to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot. That really means a lot.
Well, you mean a lot to a lot of people. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we got to sit and we got to have a conversation and got to know each other just a little bit more. The next time I go see my Reiki master, I'm going to have a conversation with her. I'm going to tell her all about you. She'll love to hear about it. She might even join us on DMT World. So,
yeah.
You never know. And, maybe in the future, we can bring you back to do some other things in the avenues of Reiki and massage and all this other things that you are interested in, because that would be a wild thing. And I think DMT World could help sponsor something like that in the future. So we'll keep that on the plate.
I definitely want to start writing.
Yes.
With you guys, and let's do something. I just one little thing. I spoke to Ben a couple of times, and we were thinking of the idea of a DMT, like a university, like kind of a course where people can actually do courses a little bit more formally.
Yeah.
And put some courses together. I'm totally into that.
That would be amazing. Yeah, we should let's brainstorm on this. We've got so many good ideas and so much that we can do, and it's time. It's time for us to be doing, as DMT World, doing things and being even more a part of what is going on. So with that being said, I just want to say thank you again for being a guest on The Rambling Rabbit. I really, really appreciate everything that you do and everything that you bring to the community.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you're very love to everyone out there.
Absolutely. Okay, Shotboy, well, you have a good birthday. Happy birthday to you. And with that, I hope everybody enjoyed this episode, and keep ascending, friends.